from the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois. This is the Closing Market Report. It is the 10th day of January 2018. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Alan Brugler. He's at Brugler Marketing and Management out of Omaha, Nebraska. Jackie Bakes is out of the office this afternoon. A bit later in the program, in fact, as we wrap up our time together, we'll talk with Drew Lerner at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City about the agricultural weather forecast, specifically in South America, Argentina. They've been getting some rain, and they'll probably get a bit more. We'll hear more about that when we get to the end of the half hour. And along the way, we'll check the cash grain market. Kylie Phillips from the Anderson's Climbers facility outside of Logansport, Indiana, will join us, and we'll hear the ag news for the day as well. And there's some information coming from Senator Chuck Grassley out of Iowa as it pertains to President Trump's thoughts on crop insurance that were expressed during the AFBF, or American Farm Bureau Federation, annual meeting in Nashville earlier in the week. And we'll do all of that right here on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report. It is public radio for the farming world. Find us online at WILLAG.org.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media for this Wednesday afternoon. We're now joined by Alan Brugler. He's at Brugler Marketing and Management out of Omaha, Nebraska. Hey, Alan, thanks for being with us today. We really appreciate that.
Hey, it's my pleasure, Todd.
Well, let's take a look at the USDA reports that are due out Friday of this week. They've been putting pressure on the marketplace. In fact, during the day today, beans were down at midday, and you and I are recording a bit earlier in the day, about 6, 7, 8 cents. They've been continuing to see some pressure, mostly because folks don't think that the pace for exports has been good enough, and USDA may change things when we see their world agricultural supply and demand estimates, and that'll be predicated, of course, I suppose, on the grain stocks numbers. What are you watching?
You hit several things there. The grain stocks, I think, is a key number, simply because that's net of any production changes they make, plus any residual use that they find necessary in the first quarter. So that one's always a little harder to call. The trade, I'm surprised the trade is looking for fairly benign numbers in terms of the crop production and yield. We know USDA doesn't usually change that much. So grain stocks is important. Of course, the exports, I think USDA probably will drop 50 million bushels. That would be our call, at least, because we are not making the pace. And it's because of the South American overhang. They had record crop. They're still exporting. We're exporting more than they are now and should be, but they're exporting more than they usually would be for December and January. So it's eaten into our market share a little bit. So, yeah, I think 480 is the trade average guess for ending stocks for next year. We're thinking it may end up actually being closer to 500 based on what we know today.
Hey, is that because, and you mentioned this, that you expect a big crop to get bigger in the crop production numbers, and is that for both corn or soybeans or either of them?
Well, actually, we're not looking for that much of a change in the production numbers. We're actually 4 million bushels less than last month, which is negligible. USDA has a history of raising that final yield in January. I think the average is only 9/10 or 9/100 of a bushel, so 1/10 of a bushel, call it. So that the trade is probably right in that. We actually think that it could be a little lower, but the problem is you've got this big problem with the exports. Your stocks on diesel one are going to be bigger. And you know, you just aren't quite making the numbers that they've got dialed in so far. So the board's trying to reflect that ahead of time. It's trying to reflect Brazil probably having 110 or 111 million ton production versus 108. That's still down from a year ago, but not by much. The wild card's probably Argentina and how much they're willing to recognize the slow planting pace there and the drying pockets that they've had down there. Knowing USDA, they're probably going to be fairly conservative on their adjustments for Argentina.
What are your expectations for corn?
On the corn side, the interesting thing on corn is there's actually more years where they drop the yield in January than there are that they raise them. If you go back 40 years or so, the average drop in down years is about 2.8 bushels. The average increase in up years is about 2.1. But again, there's a few more years they drop than raise. Some people are arguing, well, it's big crops get bigger, but What's unique about the January report is they are surveying more farmers for this report than they do in the growing season. The December survey is more than twice as big as they do in August or September or October during the growing season. And sometimes they have to make some adjustments to the yield based on what they're getting from this larger sample. And in the Western Corn Belt, what we're hearing is that the ear drop problem was just tremendous back in October. We had some varieties that lost as much as 80 to 100 bushels an acre in those high winds. And I think USDA cut Nebraska 2 bushels per acre in their November report. So some questions about whether maybe those numbers have to come down for South Dakota, North Nebraska, maybe Iowa, maybe Kansas. So I guess we're leaning towards a little lower yield, but and not the unchanged that the trade's looking for. We are expecting that those DS1 stocks will be about 50 to 100 million bushels bigger than last year, but we think we can recover some of that in the third and fourth quarter.
Has the strength in the crude oil market been supportive of corn?
Crude oil's helped corn. I think the biggest thing that's helped corn is actually the dollar. And if you look at some of the other commodities, and crude oil is a good example, cotton's another one, the sliding dollar has pushed those commodities to multi-month highs, and in some cases, multi-year highs. In corn, all it's done is fought it to a draw. All right, we're looking at 600 or 700 million more bushels of carryover for corn this year, based on the most recent numbers. But the price is within a nickel of a year ago. All right, so what that tells me is we're higher than we'd expect to be from supply and demand, but it's the weak dollar that's getting us there. You'd like to see corn actually going up on the weak dollar, like you're seeing in the cotton, but I think the fundamentals make that a little bit of a challenge. Crude oil is not helping us from the standpoint that ethanol is 47 cents a gallon cheaper than gasoline right now. That's a very wide spread. We were running 10 or 15 cents under for quite a while there. So what that tells me is there's too much ethanol, and the rise in gasoline isn't helping ethanol all that much. So that's inflation is an argument there, but other than that, we don't have much there.
Will we be front-loaded on the production of ethanol in that case, and will we start to back off in the second half of the marketing year here?
Well, the challenge there is exports. We're doing quite well on the exports. I think January through November, we're actually up 26% year-over-year on ethanol exports. I would expect our exports to Brazil will pick up over the next couple of months. Yes, they put a tariff cap on how much they can bring in, but we're not at that level for this current cycle. And their sugarcane based production is going down now seasonally, so that'll help us on the export side. What we're finding is that domestic use isn't growing very quickly. We've got you'd like to see more E15 and more E85 being used, and so should be used with this 47 cent a gallon discount to ethanol. But miles per gallon keeps going up for the U.S. fleet. That kind of slows down the growth in generic consumption. So we need that export activity. I guess I don't see it slowing down a lot unless margins are just flat out negative. And I'm hearing most plants are not making what they were making 2 quarters ago in terms of margin, but they are still in the black in most cases.
I just did the calculation on the corn-soy ratio and was thinking about the acreage numbers for new crop, the December and November contracts. It's 2.5 roughly 4 when you round it up. That's about where it's normally been historically. Does that tell you anything?
Well, yeah, it tells me we're probably going to see a few more bean acres unless something changes. Anything over 2.3 in recent years has gotten us a few more bean acres. Anything over 2.5 has gotten us a lot more bean acres. And we were at 2.6 something just recently before beans started to sell off here. So, again, it suggests that even though we were record bean acreage last year, we could see another million or two this year, unless the market changes its mind. I think the wild card there is if Brazil really gets hurt by La Nina or gets hurt by just lousy prices and not wanting to plant second crop corn down there, then maybe we get a little help on the corn side.
Before I let you go, pricing opportunities, old crop corn, soybeans, and new crop corn and soybeans.
On old crop, you know, you're basically looking for a mid-February type of a rally. We do get those occasionally. Sometimes it will happen after the January crop report if you get a surprise. But, you know, you have to have fairly modest expectations on those old crop rallies. What we've done is we've sold a lot of 390 and 370 calls on March, trying to get, you know, $3.80 to $4 type prices. If the market doesn't go there, at least we pocket the premiums. The new crop's a little different scenario. If you just do a real back of the envelope calculation with 91 million acres and a 175 yield for next year, it gets ugly in a hurry on the cash price, and anything over $4 is a good price for new crop, and we're trading, you know, 375, 385 range here for most of the last month or so. So we're in the top 25 or 30% of that expected range right now for new crop. And I'm just trying to get a little closer to the top end because it's early and you don't sell a lot this early.
Hey, Alan, thanks so much.
My pleasure.
That, of course, is Alan Brugler. He's with Brugler Marketing and Management out of Omaha, Nebraska. In today's agricultural news, the new U.S. tax law is poised to drive more control over the nation's grain supply to farmer-owned cooperatives, provoking concern among ethanol producers and privately run grain handlers. The changes mean the ABCs of the grain industry, Archer Daniels Midland, or ADM, Bunge, and Cargill, could find it difficult to source corn, soybeans, and wheat. The perceived threat to these companies stems from a provision included in the final stages of the law's passage back in December. It gives farmers such a big tax deduction for selling their produce to agricultural cooperatives that private firms fear their grain supply will dry up. Now let's go to Nashville, where voting delegates of the American Farm Bureau Federation, or AFBF, including 21 from Illinois, addressed several of Illinois Farm Bureau's priority issues during the AFBF annual convention. Our delegates successfully introduced several submittals on farm policy, the conservation programs, seed protection, property rights, and environmental and conservation issues, says Richard Giebert. He's the president of the Illinois Farm Bureau. Delegates adopted policy language for IFB to provide a floating conservation-oriented commodity loan program that increases loan rates, addresses conservation goals, and satisfies the credit needs of beginning farmers. IFB delegates also successfully advocated to oppose any increase in the Conservation Reserve Program acreage cap unless additional acres are tied to continuous sign-up practices and to the most environmentally sensitive ground. Additional policies offered by IFB and adopted by the national delegation include allowing farmers to sign up once for the duration of the farm bill, so long as there are no changes to the farming operation. Delegates also approved a bylaw change to increase AFBF dues to $5 a member, an increase of $1. The change is effective January 1st, 2019. Let's stay for a moment with the AFBF convention in Nashville. President Trump's commitment to back crop insurance in a new farm bill made during that convention does not end the threat to the Key Safety Net program by the White House or others, according to one farm state senator. The White House budget request, ditched by lawmakers, would have cut crop insurance support by more than one-third over 10 years. Long-term ag state senator and farmer Chuck Grassley was asked about the strength of the president's commitment.
Oh, I think you're going to have attempts by somebody, someplace. We've had them before to cut back on funding. But for most of us on the Agriculture Committee, I think leaving crop insurance alone is the number one safety net that we're talking about.
And Grassley corrected the president on one point.
I believe that the president left the impression that if we don't have a farm bill, we don't have crop insurance. But crop insurance is permanent law. The question that will come up during the farm bill is whether or not it'll be cut back in any way or adjusted in any way.
And Grassley says a farm bill cannot wait until lawmakers solve the ongoing annual budget stalemate. Congressional leaders are now discussing a possible further extension of temporary government funding until next month, giving them time that they need to resolve seemingly intractable differences over border security, immigration, and other issues, as well as avert a government shutdown. And finally today, one more item from the AFBF convention, where Kansas Republican Senator Jerry Moran headlined a discussion on NAFTA. Moran says our nation's farmers and ranchers earn their living through ag exports and trade, and that he will continue to insist the administration remembers the importance that agricultural trade plays in the economy. Moran urged the Farm Bureau members to continue to convey the importance of trade to both Secretary Perdue and President Trump in the months ahead. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Let's turn our attention on this Wednesday afternoon to the cash grain market. We're now joined by Kylie Phillips. She's at the Climbers facility outside of Logansport, Indiana, where they make ethanol. Kylie, this is the first time you've joined us. Tell me a little bit about yourself. Oh, and thanks for being with us today.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it. I just moved to Indiana here from Northwest Ohio, also the Corn Belt. During harvest, actually the end of September. So new to the area, new to the market area around here. Things have been moving pretty well, starting to get to know some customers now that harvest pressure is off.
And so what did you do in Northwest Ohio before you came here?
I have been marketing grain for about 3 years now. I also did some merchandising and worked with our food group and a little bit of work with our hedge desk.
So all with the Andersons, I take it.
Correct, yep.
Well, congratulations for the move to the Climbers facility and the ethanol plant. Tell me a little bit about the plant and how it's operating today.
Sure. Things have been moving really well here yesterday and today with the weather break. Now that trucks aren't gelling up, we've had some really good movement. They're cranking full speed ahead out in the plant, so things are going well.
Those are all, I take it, that are sales on the book already, or most of them. Are you getting any fresh sales?
We have been getting quite a few fresh sales. Basis has been improving here over the last couple of weeks, so a lot of it is new sales.
Where is your basis today?
We are posted at 3 under the market.
So the market is good in your area, that primarily because of the ethanol plant, I assume. And the ethanol plant is operating pretty well at this time. Let's switch topics just a bit. I'm interested to hear what you think about the move lower in the soybeans and why that happened today.
We've seen a downward trend here since the middle of December. We've had a couple of pickups. I believe it has been in preparation for the report coming out on Friday at noon. We have seen an increase in basis, kind of preparing for that as well in the markets. So I think it's all just preparation. Exports are down. Supply is pretty well set. So I don't know that we'll have a huge hit on Friday, but I think it's been preparing itself.
Hey, Kylie, thanks so much, and we appreciate you taking the time with us here at WILL.
Thank you.
That, of course, is Kylie Phillips. She is with the Andersons, their Climbers facility outside of Logansport, Indiana. When we come back, we'll talk about the agricultural weather forecast. Drew Lerner will join us. He's with World Weather Incorporated out of Kansas City. You can always hear all of our programming anytime you'd like on our website at willag.org. That's willag.org. And look for us as a podcast as well. Everything is there on the website on demand. You can find it in iTunes, the Google Play Store, up on Stitcher, by using NPR1 app as well. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on this Wednesday afternoon. Drew Lerner is here. He's with World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Drew, let's start in Argentina. Tell me about the last week's worth of weather and what you can see going forward.
Well, the last week started off with a nice little rain event Thursday night into Friday of a week ago, and that was really good, and Buenos Aires helped to take the edge of serious stress off for a few days. But since then, a big part of the country has really dried out significantly once again. There's still a little bit favorable moisture in Buenos Aires, but the rest of Argentina is really hurting now. Topsoil moisture very short nationwide, with the exception of Buenos Aires. Subsoil moisture is still a little better in pockets. And we've got another 2 days ahead of us before there's going to be any meaningful rain. A few instability showers will occur, but certainly with temperatures in the 90s to near 100 degrees, we will make no headway over these 2 days. But on Saturday and Sunday, we will see more significant rain beginning to evolve. Over the 2 days, we'll see coverage of 85 to 90% of the country getting rain. Amounts in the south, though, may not be much more than a tenth to five-tenths, local three-quarters of an inch. That's not going to do anything to help much. But central and northern areas probably pick up a half inch to an inch and a half in general, and some local 2 and 3 inch amounts. Some of the computer forecast models have actually suggested there could be more than 4 inches in several county-sized areas in central and interior northern parts of Argentina. So if all the rain comes to fruition here over the weekend, we should have enough relief to see a general improving tendency. Now, we're so dry there, follow-up rain is still very, very important. We may see temporary relief, but if we don't get some follow-up rain, it could be stressful again by the end of next week. There is some showers that are being predicted for the latter part of next week. I don't have a lot of confidence in that, but there will be at least enough precipitation to slow down the dry.
How far along are they in planting of both of their crops? Are they complete at this point or not?
There's actually some late-season crops planting that's still going on. The bulk of it is complete, and some of that early crop that was planted way back when is already reproducing. So there's quite a wide range of crop development taking place across the country, so there will definitely be some benefit from this moisture, and certainly for the late season crops, there's hope that they will still be able to perform relatively well.
Here in the United States or other places around the planet, are you concerned about the wheat crop?
Well, not a whole lot, but I do think we did some damage to hard red winter wheat in southern Kansas and northern Oklahoma, parts of the Texas panhandle, when we were in the deep freeze here a week and a half or so ago. So I am concerned from that perspective. The dryness that everyone's so focused on, I'm not terribly concerned with, because the dryness has really been after the crop was in the ground. Certainly it's not as well established as it needs to be. And if we overlook the winter kill that may have occurred, the crop would still have potential to come along fairly well in the spring if we can just get the rains to show up in a timely manner. Now, the winter kill issue is a big one that leaves a lot of questions unanswered, because, you know, we can kill the crop completely, and that'll be obvious as soon as greening comes around. But we can also hurt the production potential by sterilizing the crop, and it would still green up. We wouldn't have a clue what kind of head tilling we could see. And then, of course, if it rains significantly in the spring and the crop hasn't died, we could get some new tillering to take place, and the crop could still perform fairly well. So there's a lot of questions out there. I do not expect the southwest part of hard red winter wheat country to see much in the way of significant moisture over the next couple of weeks at least.
That's Drew Lerner. He's with World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.